All right, welcome back to the show. Welcome back. We are here with Sophia Engelsberg, actress, producer. Sophia, welcome to the show.
You for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, me too. I'm so excited to get there's so many things to cover. But I know last we I met you at Brooklyn Center for Theater Research.
That's so cute.
Yeah, and I wanted to, start by saying like Sophia is my rival because, you did graduate from Rutgers. So I'm a rival school from a fellow RU alum. I thought that was it's kind of funny. I met so many graduates that came from Rutgers in New York, and I had no idea it had such a good theater program.
Yeah, I feel like that surprises most people. It sort of stays under the radar, but then like when you get into the theater spaces and you say like, "Oh yeah, I went to Rutgers." They're like, "Oh, I know this person and this person."
Yeah,
So no, the
there, yeah, there are certain schools like that where it's like you don't even it doesn't kind of like register. It was like a theater school until like you start meeting like Elon is like such a popular one. Like when I was applying to theater schools, everybody wanted to go to Elon or USC. I had horrible grades, so I just ended up in the middle of Appalachia, and it just worked out fine. Now I'm a podcaster. But yeah.
I had terrible grades, and I was like, I don't know if I'll, because I
Oh
wanted
my
to get into
gosh.
those programs that were also like Carnegie Mellon and whatever. And I was like, it's not gonna happen. But Rutgers
No.
worked for me, and it was the best choice. I loved Rutgers for the most
Yeah.
part.
And did you grow up around the area, or were you from originally?
So I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yes, I love that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so you were born there?
Yeah, I was born there, raised there, and then I moved to Jersey for school.
Cool. That's my dad's family is from Pittsburgh or the Pittsburgh area.
Where are they from?
So my dad grew up in a small town outside the city called Aliquippa.
Oh, yeah, I know Aliquippa. So I went to a performing arts school that was like very close to there. It was in like Beaver County, which is right by
Oh my gosh. That's where like our whole crew is from on my dad's side of the family. So yeah, strong roots in the Beaver County area for sure.
love Beaver.
Yes. I mean, it's so funny. I don't think I've been back over there. Like my grandparents have since passed away, but it is crazy when you go back there because it's sort of like ghostly a little bit.
No, it's you're driving through these sort of like ghost towns of like industry, but they haven't like quite caught up yet. It's very, and it never changes. You go, it's always
Have you seen The Sopranos?
a little like I'm not I need to like sit down and just like watch all of it, but I think that would take a very long time. I'm not
Yeah. No, I mean, you don't have to watch all of it, but I mean, a couple episodes, it just reminds me of the area, or at least, New Jersey and like just the Aliquippa area where it's just like working class community, but also some crime,
Yeah. Well,
a
so my
lot of
grand,
crime.
yeah. I don't, can I say this on a podcast?
Oh, you can say whatever you want, yeah.
So like there's like the Beaver County sort of area that's like that, and then my mom's family grew up in like Greensburg area, which also is like very similar, very industrial, sort of like run down, and then a ton of crime, and my grandfather and my great grandfather are part of the mafia there. And so there's all
Oh my gosh. So I wonder if we have like third, fourth, or like fifth degree connections through the
probably
community because
the mafia Western Pennsylvania.
Definitely a couple, a lot of mafias and my grandfather worked in the steel mill. He like had an eighth grade education, then worked in the steel mill his whole life, and then was in the Korean War. But yeah, a lot of fucked up stuff happened over there. And yeah, and it's weird because a lot of people over there like just somehow dissolved either through, you know, many social economic factors. But my grandfather used to like bring home mercury and like my dad would like play with it. Like that was kind of the thing. A lot of guys like straight up just died from like poisoning and like horrible working conditions.
The stories
Yeah. Insane.
yeah
But you got out, you went to New Jersey. Have you always like been into theater, or what kind of got you started into acting?
I think I've always been into theater. I like since I was a kid, my parents, I was like super hyperactive. And so they were like dance, music, whatever, sports. And then when I was old enough to be like, I don't like sports, please stop making me do that. I got really into theater and I went to this like theater school in Pittsburgh that operated on the weekends for like the whole day. And so I'd go to this like it was called PMTU, Pittsburgh Musical Theater, and I would go in the morning and I'd take like acting classes in the morning and then like dance classes and then like we'd have like rehearsals for a showcase and then it would be like 7 p.m. and my parents would pick me up. And that was like from like age like 5 to like 15, 16. It was like a really it was a really great environment because like I mean you grew up around like all of these kids who were really passionate about theater and they took it very seriously. But I like it's been and then going straight into conservatory and also going to performing arts schools. Like I've been kind of in the environment for a really long time. And then having to kind of change your mindset and like not take it so seriously or like develop yourself as a theater artist in a way that like maybe you weren't taught to is that I'm still like learning and growing in. Like I was like I was a ballerina. I danced like very seriously, and then I was like I think I want to be an actor. I think I want to be like in film and TV. I hated singing. Every time I sang, I was
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm
I
sure you experienced this in college, but you know, we had like musicals every 2 years, and I just like it's like I could get by, but that was the worst part about it because I'd rather just be a horrible singer than be like, oh, she can hold the tune. But then, like, really, everybody's like, oh, she's struggling, you know?
Exactly. And I was like, I don't want to, I don't, there's people that don't struggle. So
I know why.
but it was kind of hard because I was like, oh, if I give up this thing, like, does that mean I'm like not good enough? And then it was just sort of like changing my mindset to be like, no, my focus is elsewhere. And I started to really love like Shakespeare and like I just started to take a more like serious path toward acting high school. Like actually like in the middle of high school, I was like, I think now, but to accept, like, you may not be like as good at the few things is like it was hard because you really want to be the best.
I
Just
know, it's like there's a meme I saw that was like when you wake up and you're not immediately like the most talented Broadway singer there ever was, you know? There's a like, okay, so have you heard of this girl Renee Rapp?
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I swear she's like one of those girls that like militantly trains in musical theater, and then she just like popped off. And it just reminds me so much of those girls who were just like wildly talented that I went to like middle school and high school with, where I'm like, oh no, no,
Yeah,
crazy.
she's crazy, but she's and she also like she went like right from the Jimmy Awards, the High School Jimmy Awards, just like straight to Broadway, and that arc is crazy too.
What is like up with these people's vocal cords? Is there something I'm missing inside of me? Like, is there a muscle I don't have like nerve endings on? I'm like,
Probably.
where?
like I because they have to like that and like
anyways but no, I totally relate to that sentiment of being like, okay, because when you're a kid, it's just, you kind of don't really have, like, if you pick something, you just do it very militantly a lot because your parents kind of need somewhere to, like, put you. And, and then when you, like, grow up and you start having more agency, it's kind of, it does feel like that feeling of, like, oh, now I have to, like, really make a decision and I have to be okay with what kind of mindset I approach it with. That's something, I'm still figuring out every single day to this day.
And I remember being like, oh, am I like even good enough to do act? Like if I don't, if I choose to not pursue all of the things, like, does that mean I'm not good enough to do it at all? Like, should I just like completely 180 and do like become a writer or some like a writer or something? And I had to really adjust my mindset to be like, no, it's okay to just do this. And
And you had a great experience at Rutgers.
Yeah, for them. Yeah, I think. I mean, like college.
For the most part.
college acting programs are like really intense, and Rutgers was also really intense. It's a Meisner training program, so first 2 years of that are really like deeply personal and and intense. But like out of that, I was. You come to like learn so much about yourself and the group that you're working with that you have like a very deep appreciation for. Like, it's very sentimental to me.
That's cool. Like, I can imagine that's like kind of almost, because I mean, my first acting class freshman year, we were just like doing jumping jacks, you know, for 30 minutes. But for Meisner, like, I don't know. I only have like a surface level understanding of Meisner from school. But what are sort of like the basic principles of coming from a Meisner background?
Yeah. So you start like the training based like just as yourself. You don't really approach like character or script analysis or anything until like really like the like halfway through the first year, but not really like intensely until the second year. So you're like approaching your scene partner as yourself, and you're doing repetition exercises, which like repetition just starts with like making an observation about your partner. Like, I'd say you're wearing a gray blazer and you would repeat that back to me, and then the repetition changes like five different ways, and it's all very technical. And so once you get the technical down, then it starts to like really build into these like really beautiful emotional moments. You have no idea where it's going. So it's like sort of, and then you just kind of fly blind with your partner, and you have to have like immediate trust, and eye contact is really important. Breath is really important. And then that exercise builds for, it can build for 2 years. And you basically take repetition out at some point, and you're just having a conversation that's like based off of a circumstance that you create with your partner. So like we establish a relationship and a circumstance. You come to me wanting something, like I took your keys and you want your keys back, but you're also my sister, and I know that you like fucked my boyfriend last week, and then we have this like exercise, and so you're basically like learning how to create the foundations of a scene with yourself, and then you kind of approach script that way as well, and it's really just like, I think the first 2 years is like really about finding like what makes you tick and what like really genuinely important to you as a person. I remember coming to college and being like, oh, I know myself. Like, I know what's important to me. I know the foundations
of
a person. I'm an artist. Right?
Yeah.
And then you're in class and you're like, oh, the way that you said that to me, I'm not really as passionate about that as I thought, or I actually completely indifferent, or wow, that really pisses me off. And then you can really establish character based off of that. When you read a script, you're like, that's what stands out to me. I can build my character off of that impulse, off of that thing that really speaks.
I really like that, because it seems to me like it's really focusing on just understanding who you are as a person before you step into somebody else's world.
Exactly. Yeah.
And yeah, that is also interesting because typically you'll see actors point out different things in scripts because of their background and like who they are. And I know when I was 19, I don't know who the hell I was. It's just like, I just want to have a million boyfriends.
Yeah, well, no, that's exactly. I did a lot of my like primary activities at Rutgers was like about my boyfriends, about sex, about all of those things that were like really speaking at the time.
Oh yeah. Well,
Yeah.
they're speaking to
And
you.
I always that was sort of that I tapped into that, and it, that was like a very scary thing to do because you're also you're in a very personal environment, like you're in a circle with yourself. But then there's like 23 other people watching you that you don't really know. And you get to know. But
Yeah, and even I typically find that the smaller the circle is, even if it's a couple people, I'd much rather play to like, a room of like 500 people. 'Cause when it's like 23 people that you know and like are understanding their personalities really well, you're really absorbing all of those people at once. So
yeah.
yeah, it's a mental game for sure. Yeah.
And yeah, in a room full of strangers, you're like, yeah, I could, I'll shed
Who
all of my for
cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you have like your peers that are really your peers, you have to be brave and like say, this is me. And we're, and that's also, I think, what's really important about Rutgers, and also because it's kind of off the radar, is that what like happened in those rooms really stays in those rooms. Like there's an element of trust within the company and within the professors, that it's just like you're, this is your training. You don't have to talk about this. You don't have to like, you just, it's very private. And so there's a lot of room for growth and experimentation. But then with that being said, it's like a lot can happen. And you sometimes you back, you're like, whoa, I just processed that like 2 years later, like that
Yeah.
moment in
I'm still
class.
processing, what? But it sounds like you had really good mentorship as well.
Yeah. I had a great, my acting teacher, Kevin Kittle, is a great mentor. And he was trained under S. William Esper, who was, so it was like Meisner, Esper, Barbara Marchant, who started the Rutgers program with Esper, and then Kevin. There's this sort of like lineage, really trusted acting teachers. And that was like, that was an honor in itself, is like getting to train under these people who were so close to the people who created the technique and like developed it. And then I still like, I still, the program sort of shifted during our second year because of COVID, mainly. But so then there was like this big shift in the teachers and who the professors and the people who were representing the program. And so out of that, like we as a company had to sort of like create our own mentors and like be each other's support systems because we, I mean, like we obviously had people supporting us, but like they weren't the people that had taken us through those first 2 years of school, right? So like it's hard to establish, like reestablish trust. So I think, yeah, I think my acting class became very, very close with just each other because that was like really all we had. And we still are really close. And so there's the mentors that are the teachers and the mentors I think that are your company and your friends. And like
Definitely.
become future collaborators. Like Jonah and Tamir, who are in Zoom with me, are from Rutgers. Like we're from the exact same company.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah.
That's cool because it's like you're working with them, you have this familiarity. It almost like speeds up the process a little bit because there's just so much that's familiar there. It's like natural chemistry.
Yeah, totally. You can just.
When did you like make the leap from New Jersey to New York?
Last year, this,
Wow.
I know,
A lot has happened.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah. I mean, wow, that is, yeah, a lot can happen in a year.
Yeah, it can.
Just goes to show.
I wasn't planning on moving to New York at all. I was, like, kind of under the idea. I was like, I don't think I'm ready. I think I'd rather, like, leave school and go back to Pittsburgh, where I had, like, kind of established a theater community. And it was smaller, and I felt like, okay, that'll be easier to break into. Maybe I'll get some work, and then I can move to New York. And then I went to see a production of Dover at Beckett's, which is Matt's play, and it was starring George and Izzy. And I just kind of went under, well, actually I went because I had followed George's meme page. I feel like
yes.
I have this story, which is crazy. And it just speaks to like how the network has like, has changed, how social media can like help you find like your collaborators. But yeah, I really went by myself to just like, while I was in New York during school, and I was, I just went, walked in, saw the play, and I was like, oh, this is completely different than anything I would have thought could happen. And then,
it's not like the movies, it's better.
Like I walked into Beckett's and I was like, oh, like I smelled the cigarette smoke, and I saw everyone just like lingering and hanging out before the play, and it was so so magical, and I was like, I want to be a part of this. And then post show I started talking to Izzy and Matthew and George, and they were like, do you want to come and like be an arter? And I said yes. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Pittsburgh and I was like, fuck, I have to move to New York. Like,
That's the best thing. That's also the best thing about Matt too. He's like, do you want to be in this? You know, that's kind of like, he's like, oh, do you want to play this role? That's the best.
I was like, I didn't expect that to happen. Cause in my experience of theater, it's like, oh, you got to audition. Mm-hmm. You have to network. And like, just think that like you could come and genuinely connect with a group of people, and they trust their intuition enough to give you an opportunity. That was amazing, and it totally changed. I mean, completely changed my life. But like, it was it was. And then I was like faced with the decision to be like, okay, I might not actually feel ready for New York, but it feels like New York might be ready for me. And so
that's very beautiful. Because it's like, you know, you're seeing the signs, and I think that's a good mindset to go in. Because I mean, there's been many times in my life where I've been ready for something, but then based on the, you know, thing, life is happening, and I'm like, you know what, I'll wait it out. But when you see the signs, you see the opportunity, you know, just take it. And I think that's the best, and it's really serendipitous when that happens. When did you, I mean, what was the move like? Where are you right now?
I actually, right now I'm at the Brooklyn Center for Theater Research.
Oh,
I'm in.
Okay, cool.
I'm in our office/green room.
Okay, cool.
Best lighting.
It does. I was going to say, I was thinking in my mind, I was like, okay, what am I, the captions I'm going to write about this lighting. But cool.
My Zoomers costumes are hanging here.
Perfect. You're all ready to go.
I love it. I love like coming here during the day because it's usually empty. It's like we always have something going on at night, but during the day, unless there's like classes or a rehearsal, it's very empty. So I like to come here and just like hang out. But I live in Flatbush, and the move was crazy. It was like my dad and I taking two separate cars of all of our stuff, and then like moving me into this apartment that we'd never seen before. I just saw it on Street Easy. And he moved me in and was like freaking out. Like just, oh my God.
He's just like, he's like nervousness.
I was so nervous for me to move, but we did it. And then like I moved in, I moved all my stuff in, and then like 2 days later we put Arter up at, well, I jumped into Arter at Beckett. So I like had 2 days of rehearsal, post moving into my apartment and then the first show. So it was a very crazy, like, I had like no furniture in my apartment.
Yeah.
And like, okay, time to go.
No furniture. But plenty of friends. Yeah, no problem. Wow, that is crazy. And you're moving, but you're also doing kind of like rehearsing as well.
Yeah.
During this.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're
living, and then you live in Flatbush. You live by yourself?
I live with my roommate Tamir, who is also from Rutgers and also in Zoomers with me. Yeah.
Nice. Wow. And you've just been there for a year and all, and you like Flatbush? I was there recently for something, but I have a friend who lives down there.
It's far, but it's so quiet, and like I have a spacious apartment that I wouldn't be able to have if I lived closer to Manhattan. I have a garage, which is crazy.
Excuse me, I didn't know I was in the presence of royalty.
It's like when I told people that, they're like, first of all, you haven't even lived here for a year. You don't deserve a garage. And I'm like, I know, but I love my car so much. And so getting to, like, that was part of why I picked that apartment. Cause I was like, where else in the world am I going to be able to find, where else in New York am I going to be able to find an affordable apartment with a 2-car garage?
What? Insane. Also, it's like another sign New York's ready for you to park car and kick your feet up. Yeah.
I pulled into that garage and I was like, okay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. What kind of car do you have?
I have a Toyota RAV4.
Nice. That's a good one.
2018.
I'm so into, I'm weirdly into cars only recently because I haven't driven in like 8 years. And I don't have my license, and I'll probably have to like take driving lessons again. So I'm like so fast. And also, when you have a car like in the city, you're like everybody's best friend. Also, always a lot of rides.
Like that was also why I think I jumped into like working at the center so much, is because I was like, I have a car. They were moving spaces. There was a time when they were moving spaces and Matt was like, I need help moving all of the books. And I was like, okay. And I called my car, and Anastasia like filled the car with all of these books. And it was like, it was actually like filled to the ceiling of the car. And then we unloaded them all into the center, and then the center.
You got in your car and you're like, step on it. yes, I'll be right over. Wow. So Ardor closes, and then, I mean, how has your routine been since that? I mean, you've spent a lot of time at the center. Do you audition at all, or are you just mostly spending time in, like, the community?
So, yeah, I think, I mean, the community is amazing, and I've really found my place in that. I've done, let's see, four or five of Matt's plays since then. I have a manager, Michelle. Shout out Michelle. She's based in LA, and so she sends me a lot of like film and TV auditions that I do, and also some theater.
This would be a great room for like a self-tape, I feel like.
Oh, it is. I've taped in here before.
Yeah. Great really lighting. Good. I love the green too.
I love green. This is my favorite color. So I think that's also why I love this room so much.
Yeah.
So I audition for a lot of stuff all the time. Like the center has been great because, especially during the strike and stuff, like not a lot was happening. And so I mean, like, I'm not SAG or anything, but being able to be doing theater, and it's sort of like this community of like people who were out of work, like came here and started seeing things or participating in things. And so that really grew the network. And then I kind of understood how to sort of operate in New York in an untraditional way, which was a total shock out of school, because like we had talked about earlier, there's like this sort of like, wait, hold on, I have to move my computer. I like, it's so bright.
No, you look like you're in a Glossier ad. I love it.
And I love Glossier. Okay, this is fun.
Perfect.
Yeah, so it was like finding these two things, and then also finding time to still like figure out how to break into the industry. And that's, it's been a challenge, but it's also been really, really fun. And I think learning that like there isn't necessarily just like one way to do both things. Like you can be downtown theater, you can be doing like unconventional stuff, and then also still be a working actor that's auditioning for Law and Order and stuff.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's no like one recipe, one template. Everybody's different. And I think, success is kind of like what you define it as. What you mentioned, like there's been challenging elements. What's been one of the most challenging things?
I think time, like finding time to do everything. Like when you're acting and producing a play that you're really passionate about, and then you have 6 self-tapes due, and you also have to make rent. And I mean, that's the actor's challenge. And so, it's that. So making rent, doing everything I want to do artistically, and also like finding time and money to like eat dinner.
Man, there's been a lot of, sometimes I, honestly, it's funny sometimes, like when you're so pressed for time, I will literally be eating something and I'll look at it and I'll be like, this is hilarious. I will take a picture of it and send it to my friends. Because there's sometimes you have to like heat up some like fake food that you pick up from some random place. And I'm like, do I eat real food anymore? Like that's one challenge for me.
Like real food takes time and energy.
Where is that?
It's DoorDash for me.
Well, I want to talk about Zoomers. So you produce Zoomers. How did you get into producing, and how did Zoomers happen?
Well, I guess those are like kind of two different questions, because Zoomers happened. We did the first draft reading of Zoomers in July. And that, I guess, it just happened. Matt was like, I'm going to write a play called Zoomers. We had just started like dating. And so it was a kind of, the play is a beautiful exploration of like Gen Z. And that character is very reflective of Matt and I's relationship at the time. Which has since developed, and all of these characters have really developed. But they're all based around this sort of like network that was like kind of a mix of our communities. So like Henry and Jonah were in Afters, and then Tamir, like I said, is my roommate. Renee, who plays Jada, is one of my best friends of like 4 years. We were sort of bringing these people together, and the Gen Z like energy was so so apparent.
What is the Gen Z energy? I'm still trying to figure it out.
I mean it's just like the internet generation, the way that we talk, the way that we interact, our vices, like weed and vaping, and Meg, like I say vaping and
love Meg. No, okay, so I always say like the vape culture in New York is like on points. And you know what, also the funny thing about like drugs, the weed culture here in Chicago is we have dispensaries, so it's like it's very legal to like have a retail experience in Chicago. You can just like make an appointment and pick up an order in a store. But when I go to New York, like I always forget. It's like kind of still different. It's not exactly the situation.
Like go into a smoke shop and you're like, can I have a pre-roll? And you have no idea what you're gonna get.
But amazing selection in New York of vapes. Just everything. It's like walking to a candy store.
It's crazy. I've been trying to quit heavily for like a year now. And then with Zoomers, I was like, my character vapes. I know she does. I pressed it for like the first half of the run. I was like, no. But then we were in a conversation about like bringing the play back in 2024 or like in 2024, and I remember being like, there needs to be more vaping in the play. Like, we talk, like,
definitely.
And I was like, Meg was like, Sophia, you should vape. My character can't vape because she's a musical theater star. And I was like, damn, my character doesn't vape.
You have to take one for the team.
But yeah, and then like I leave it as like my prop vape.
Oh yeah. I have some props around my desk as well. Have you ever heard of this brands? Okay, what's your favorite brand of vape?
Do you have a choice? I think like the Air Bar. I like the Air Bar.
The Air Bar? Okay, yeah. Cool.
I'm an American Spirit girly. My cigarette.
Definitely. I have two sitting right here. They're like my little tiny guys.
I wish we were both chain smoking.
Seriously. I know that's why this one is like half lit, because like I was drunk one night and I was like, what if I just lit it indoors? And then it was like, I was like, oh no, like the old ladies downstairs are gonna like get me kicked out. No, I smoked American Spirits in college, and I don't know, it's just that definitely it's in my soul. For sure.
Like, so I love having like a cigarette in my hand. Like, I think it always activates me in another way.
I will literally hold one, or just like while I'm like sitting here and I'm like hunched over, I don't know, something about it. It's like the weight of it. It's like the smell. I don't know. Something about it. But yeah.
So Zoomers, the cast sort of like came very organically. And everyone's sort of like traits, sort of with it. And then we were doing some draft readings, and then I sort of kind of like understood very immediately that the energy of this play was very different than like the plays that I had been a part of from Matt's like world before. And I was sort of like, that's a big opportunity for us to grow our audience and for us to like kind of branch out. And so Henry and I kind of took the roles of producers as well as actors on the play. And I'm like very visually creative, and I like marketing. And so my idea was just like really visually brand the play, and it was that we hadn't before at the center in my experience. So that was like getting a very bright poster made, sort of like a cast photo shoot. And it felt very commercial at the time, but I was a little hesitant about that, because I was like, that's not really our brand at the center. Like, when you come, when you come to the center, it's very like, the chairs don't match, and you can smoke on the roof, and like, we don't ever start on time. It's not like you're seeing a play on Broadway, but that's, I think that also helped the production a bit, because people came with a certain expectation of like, this is what the play is going to look like visually. This is what, from the promotional materials, this is what I think I'm getting. And then they would get something completely different. And then I was just like, really, like, producing, I've realized, is just like, you're really just figuring it out as you go. You're just like, okay, this is the response I'm getting. Now what do I do? And it's finding like press and finding different ways to promote the play, to grow the audience. And we've had like a really great team. And the play's obviously really benefited from the team working so hard to grow the audience and grow awareness. I know like a lot of the cast like gets like especially the cast members who like go to like NYU, like they're always stopped and they're like, are you in Zoomers? And
oh my gosh, that's crazy. I mean, the audience turnout is kind of incredible at these shows.
We see 45-ish, but every single show has been completely sold out. Overfilled.
Wow.
Yeah.
How has the play kind of grown or evolved over time? Like, what kind of conversations are coming up as it, you know, has a life of its own a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think the play is like muscle memory at this point for most of us. And it's crazy because it's such snappy dialogue. It moves fast. The opening scene of the play, they're all playing Smash, and like they are really playing Smash. And so once, like, I think once we have it down, like we can do it in our sleep, all of these realizations come, these like characters really deepen, and they become like really deep parts of ourselves that are reflected. And yeah, I think, I mean, there's just so much more to explore than you initially realize. And so like for the whole first like run from like October to November, that character feels completely different than the character that I'm playing now. We change things aesthetically, like we add props, we change costumes, we just try to make it fresh for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a testament to how good the script is that like that there are you hear it differently every night, you experience it differently every night. And yeah, there's still like new experiences to be had.
The more I read about it, because I don't think I've read the play, but the more I kind of like read reviews, it seems to me like this very interesting theme of like hoarding vibes, or like being so zooming so fast, like doing so many things to the point where, you know, your exterior life like starts to notice and pick up on like how much you're taking up in terms of like your energy. And I get this sense of kind of like these characters are like doing whatever they can and like trying to like avoid almost burnout. I get like,
yeah,
burnout, no, that's... is kind of a theme that like I'm tapping into a little bit. Yeah,
totally is a theme. And like emotional burnout when it comes to your career, to your relationship, these characters are adjusting to New York at such a fast pace, and they're all very young, and so they're all having these like different experiences of like what their lives are like now and what they want them to be. If they're none of them are really satisfied, and the play itself doesn't necessarily like give them that satisfaction by the end. Like there's a lot of unresolved things happening, but it's okay because that's life, that's living, that's being a consumer in New York in 2024. And I think George and I have like are the closest thing that comes to catharsis in the play. But yeah, I mean, it really does leave with so many open-ended questions about like what's next for these characters and what's next for their experiences. Like is Jada gonna move? She moves out of New York in the first act. I think she doesn't come back for the second act. Is she gonna come back? Is her hometown like where she wants to be? We don't really know. Like what happens with these characters' relationships? Do they move out? Do they get back together with their ex? Like so many open-ended things. And so you can kind of change the narrative also throughout the play. There's a lot that can be like changed and discovered.
Yeah, and your character is kind of like the one that like calls out George's character, right? Like just like identifying or saying the quiet part loud a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ella is it's a great character to play. It's nice to be the one in the room that finally addresses the thing, and the audience reacts so like
that's so satisfying too.
Like I get a lot of lines that are very direct and very like punchy, but they come from a really good place, like a really endearing place of just genuinely wanting to have this conversation. But people aren't really prepared for it, especially because the play has been like so avoidant the whole time. And then you get to this final second to last scene in the play where it's like, no, now we're going to talk about all of this.
Yeah. And that's very satisfying as an audience member, because sometimes when you're watching a play, you have those thoughts of like, I just think it's funny how in this play we're doing this, but eventually when a character like finally like says the quiet part loud, it's like very satisfying as an audience member. And also I think from an audience perspective, you know, the characters are, you know, maybe not ready for what your character is about to say or have a conversation about. Sometimes the audience isn't ready either to hear it. And that's something that I think is really interesting. Sometimes you'll have these shows where the audience is maybe, they get something that they didn't expect. What has that been like, or how has like the response to the show like changed and shifted?
God, the audience is so reactive.
Cool. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Amazing, right? Because we're in this small seat. There's like the small space. There's 45 to 50 people in the space at a time, including the cast and the crew. You can see the audience's faces. And so like from the jump in the play, they're always Matthew always says like before the show, like you have please like feel free to be responsive, to laugh, to like feel, which is really important for the audience to hear because they're in such an intimate space. So they kind of feel like they're a part of it. So I think there's this initial impulse to like hold back and like not want to react. You don't want the actors to feel like you're judging them or whatever. But once they let go of that, it's like, there's all of this laughter. It's so eruptive. Like people say things like people will be like, no, she did not. Or like,
that's awesome. Like
ask them stuff. And it's great. Cause it energizes the play so much. And I think that's like the best part because you never know how people are going to respond. And when like George and I have our scene towards the end, that's, I think, the most cathartic part of the play, like I said, and it gives the audience the most opportunities to react. And you can really feel in that scene, like who's on my side and who's on George's side. And it's like, who's pro age gap relationship and who's like, this is weird. And if they change their mind by the end, you truly can feel everyone's support shifting. And that's really crazy.
That's so interesting. It reminds me of when I was a freshman in college. I had a boyfriend who was, I was 18, he was 22. Yeah. And it's not that, really not an age gap relationship, but in the at the time, like in our community, it was like, so like, oh, you're 18 years old. And honestly, I was 18 years old and he was 22 and I like felt like the coolest, hottest, sexiest girl in the world because my boyfriend was 22 and he was the president of our improv club. So I was just like, I'm cloud nine, but it was like, I know improv royalty, but at the time it was very like, whoa, such very controversial because he was so much older than me. He was only 1 year away from like just like being an adult, and he had like a car all these things. It is weird because I never, the age gap relationship discourse is very strange to me because it's never really something I thought about in any kind of like serious way, but it's interesting to see these conversations happen, like picking apart certain dynamics. I think as a girl, you kind of just like have a natural attitude of being like, I have to take care of the world anyway. So why not? I mean, what are your thoughts?
God, I have like a lot of thoughts. It's always been like, I've kind of always sort of sought out like relationships with like more mature or older men. Like that's something that I will admit to. But getting to explore it in the play has...
Because you're healthy and smart and,
Yeah. Also, like, delusional. Sometimes. Sorry, it's, like, such a heavy question.
It's interesting because, like, to me, I always think... I don't know because I just don't, I think at a certain point, I think that is why people talk about age gap relationships, because at a certain point later in your life, there is sort of a tipping point that you have to take responsibility for. Like right. I always talk with my husband, like on statistically, men usually die first before right. women do. Women usually live longer. And, I just thought to myself, I'm like, oh, well, he's going to go first. And I think at that point, I'll probably only live for like a couple more years. So I'll be fine. I'll be prepared. If you are somebody where like there maybe is, I have like one of our family friends is a doctor, and she always says like, don't go above 8 years. Like everybody sort of has like their own specific threshold for what they think like works for them and doesn't work for them.
Yeah,
and it's like a preference.
People will be like, oh, well, women mature faster than men anyway. So, like, you have an age gap, but, like, really that's, like, slimmer than you think. And I mean, it's just, like, if you understand each other intellectually and emotionally and you have, like, an understanding and it's not, you're not at a disadvantage with, like, if this person is your partner, then that person is your partner, and it's safe in that way. Like, I think there's this sort of like, kind of like general thought, I think, out there that like, there's always someone in an age gap relationship that's like being taken advantage of and doesn't have as much agency. Like, I've had to advocate for myself a lot, especially in doing this play, because like Matthew and I are engaged. And so like, but like before that we weren't, and like before January we weren't. And so like having to advocate for like my own agency and being like, I know what this play is about. I know what we're discussing in this play, and it is a reflection of my own life. But like, I'm not this puppet. Like I'm fully aware of the age gap. I'm fully aware of the like preconceptions that come with that. And I'm accepting that because I'm willing to talk about it, and I'm willing to like, to be a part of that discourse. And that's also, it's made me much more confident in my relationship and like in my career too. There's a sort of like, oh, do you want that to be out in the open? Do you want like to have like a relationship with your artistic collaborator? I didn't like seek it out, but that's where I am, and this is my life, and it's a very beautiful thing. We've created such like a amazing community, and it's celebrated. So
because to you, you're like, this is just my life. I'm just living life. I have a nice community.
I'm super happy. In love. Do what I love every day.
But there is like an amount of like, when you're a girl and you're like younger, significantly younger than your partner, there is sort of like this sense of like misogyny that comes out, where people sort of have this attitude of like the woman is like just like the little puppy that like runs around, and it's like definitely. Like, I always think of, like, one of my favorite characters or couples on Succession is Connor and Willow is her name. Because they're in an age gap relationship, but they're literally like the most sweetest, softest, most virtuous people in the show. Because relationship is mutually beneficial, but that's like very secondary to like the real relationship they have. And the whole show, they're the only couple that like genuinely look each other in the eyes and like say like, I'm going to be here for you, like no matter what the situation is. And like she says, like in the show, like, I like you for you, not, you know, your money, not for, you know, the clothes and the cars and everything, like, because I genuinely like you. So yeah. Exactly. And I think that blows people's minds.
It does. And you're like, oh yeah, if I took everything away, I'd still want to be with you.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, you talk to so many people and they're like, oh yeah, my parents are 10 years apart, or like, it's not uncommon. I think it's just like, because it's a more like public thing. It's like conversation that we're continually having, that people are very curious about it. And that's totally, that's okay. But yeah, I think after a certain amount of time, the judgment sort of goes away when you realize they're just two people that really love and care about each other, and they're partners. So that's that.
what other things does this play touch on? I think, definitely a lot of like overworking and overthinking and overanalyzing to me, it seems.
Yeah. That's sort of how we're programmed. Mm-hmm. Anxiety.
I know. And I don't like it, because I'm a thinker. Like, I went to theater school, so I'm like, I'm thinking. And when I started like working in the tech world, everybody has this attitude of like, don't think, like, just don't think, don't overanalyze. Just like, I just hate it, because I just could sit here and look out the window and like think about everything all day.
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay, spiral. That's me. It's like, I think too much about the thing. I
know. There's a time where it's like, okay, walk away from it.
And I think that's the sort of thing. It's like all of these characters are overthinking and overanalyzing themselves, and they're just on the precipice of like making a change. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where the play ends. Unless they do change. But
yeah.
I mean, there's great conversations about like situationships and like sex life in New York and dating in New York, and a lot of like really great great one-liners about like living in Brooklyn. Experiences like the L train and the deli and all of those I just moved to New York conversations over there as well. And so like there are light themes in the play that are just really enjoyable, but they're the relationship discourse is great. Jacob, Henry's character, has two different relationship scenes, one with a girl that he has like just met at a bar, and they're like coming back from like a Hinge date. And he's sort of like, he's not comfortable sexually, and so like she's sort of pursuing very curiously, and he's holding back a ton. I think there's a lot of like there's a lot of studies about like Gen Z is having less sex, and like Gen Z is just not as active. Like, we're on the dating apps, but do we ever get off them? Not really.
No, not really. Yeah. Well, I would say, younger people definitely are having less sex. And I think people who are in relationships also, I'm sure on some grand scale, are having less sex in some way. But I think the idea is like, if you're a single person, you should be having a lot of, I mean, it's been a long time since I've been single. Yeah, our birth rates are going down for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is weird.
That's another thing that I think the audience really relates to, that scene.
So I've got this New York Times review right in front of me. That like? I have some thoughts, but what was the main takeaway from that?
Well, I mean, it was really surreal, especially to see the print. It was like, and it was a moment where I was just so proud of everyone. I was like, oh my God, we did this.
Yeah,
we got recognition for our play. And the review itself, I've come to really appreciate. I think like, I mean, a play cannot be about everything, but I think when you have a group of actors who are like presenting to you their lives in this in this form. The play is about everything. You can't like, because it's not in the script doesn't mean it's not in the world. And I think because we're all very aware of ourselves and who we are as these characters, that like a lot of the themes that may not actually be addressed in the play are just still present. And so that like kind of like her comment about like, oh, the play could have dealt with class more or whatever, I'm like, sure, that is there. It's just in small doses. It's not necessarily what
because it's kind of baked in a little bit into the action. I always say, like, it's baked in, girl. Like, it's in there.
But, I mean, it was a huge triumph for us. It was so exciting. And we were, I'm trying to think about, like, what that week was. Like, it was crazy because we got the New York Times review, and then we had a weekend of performances in Manhattan that like to follow it. That was just a coincidence that like we got the Times review, and then we had a whole weekend of shows set up to do in Chelsea. And so the turnout for that was crazy. Like we had to turn away people at the door because they wanted to come, and we were like, we're at capacity, we can't.
Yeah.
But like it was very exciting. There was just this like joy that was so present. I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on it.
From an outsider perspective, and like just not really having read or seen the play, my only like access to this play specifically is just through the reviews. And I think as from an outsider perspective, I really liked the review because it just had so much to say. And I also thought like there were bits and pieces of it that were very ironic, but in like a very way that was like, I felt like it was kind of cute because at the end there's a lot of things that like I can get from certain reviews that I could get from the play as well. Like, I feel like the reviews in some way do, you know, reflect like the cultural criticisms that Zoomers goes into. I mean, at the end of the review, she says like, 2 hours and 15 minutes, like, I would have fewer demands for a shorter work and stuff like, there's this concept that like everybody's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. Just some of the words that she used, I really liked a lot because it's clear in the review that there are so many things that are very, everybody can identify with that she was identifying. And that's what I really like about this review because she says things like, oh, very disillusioning. And I would say a young person's experience is disillusioning. Like I've had just had so many, especially since my 20s are now over, I guess. Your 20s are like sort of a series of very, like a revolving door of like disillusionment a little bit. Like that is kind of like the whole point of like being, and I can imagine this writer showing up to the show and being like, this is it, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think that's also like, they have to, when you're reviewing the play, like you have to get over the jump of like, oh, I'm not in the space I'm used to. And Brittany, I think Brittany the reviewer is primarily like a pop culture writer. I'm not aware of her doing many theater reviews, I could be wrong. But I really liked that she brought her perspective on that because it's not like a traditional theater review. They don't really go into specifics about the performance or whatever, but it is like, I really appreciate it because it's real criticism. It's not like, oh, I liked it and here's a plot synopsis and whatever.
That is right. You do see that a lot with theater reviews where it's just a very kind of surface level overview of the plot. But she points out some very like poignant, very specific stuff from the play.
So much like opportunity for further discussion. Like the comment section of that review, I don't know if you can see that. there are so many responses.
Too poor.
to you. I literally my subscription just so that I could tap with you.
I've done that so many times where I'm like, I get this subscription, then I cancel it, then I get it. And then they make it so hard to break up.
No, I'm like, oh yeah, I read the times.
Yeah.
But yeah, so many people have like come and said, I related to this place so much. Like, these performances really stood out to me. People would be like, yeah, I didn't like it, but I'm glad that I went because I would have never known about theater happening in Brooklyn at this level without this review. So like getting institutional recognition was like really huge. It put us on the map. We've had like so many new audience members come because of this. And they all, but yeah, they have to adjust to like this being a completely untraditional theater space and this their expectations being completely defied. Really exciting because I think it, I mean, you see that there's so much of this theater happening now, like downtown and in Brooklyn, and people's ideas of like what theater can be and what plays can be has, I think, shifted. Well, it's always, I think it's always been, like, downtown theater has been forever. But in this era, it has shifted. And I think it's really beautiful. I think, I mean, like, there's the idea of, like, the clout play, which is, like, not a thing.
I was saying, like, there's so many things, like, there's so many new, like, words and phrases that have yet, that are still, like, just stating because there's, I'm like, down there's downtown theater, indie theater, like all of these little names for things, but I'm like, oh, there's so much more there because then there's these specific communities that are exclusive to like the Brooklyn or area and like certain neighborhoods. Yeah, there's so many possibilities, so many memes, the meme possibility.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, like, but yeah, getting the recognition, but also while staying true to what we do was really important.
Yeah, maintaining like the integrity of, I mean, I always say like the energy you start with has to be like the energy like you finish with when you're kind of like bubbling up to like some surface. But yeah, and I always say like, I mean, all press is good press, you know, it's good for SEO. So yeah, I mean, that is crazy. And I can really relate to how she talks about like their traumas being like swept aside to, you know, go to an event or go play video games.
Yeah. And there's my favorite moment in the play that I don't think has been like written about yet is like there's in the Paul and Jada scene, they're having this conversation about like going out that night and about Michael, who's Jada's roommate, who Paul is like sleeping with, and like when he's coming back and like all of these things. They're just talking, and then they just pull out their phones and for like a minute they just both scroll on TikTok in silence. And it's so, I mean, everyone does that. Watching, we have this like little peephole in the door. And I love kind of like watching the audience in that moment react to that because like, and initially they think it's like really funny. Like they're like, ha ha ha, they're on TikTok now. Like the TikTok audios are going and they're laughing because they recognize them. And then slowly like they realize like, oh, that's me. And then we're going to be for a while. Like we're scrolling. This could be, I mean, I've spent times with my friends where we've just been on our phone for like hours and then we finally like look up and we're like, oh hey, like into that experience. So that's really cathartic for the audience too, I think, to be on the other side and have like no option but just to like be a part of it.
I mean a lot of people, the best parts are when like you're in an awkward situation and you have like nothing else to do and you don't want to like face the pain of like, you know, interacting socially. That people, you see people just like pull out Instagram and just start swiping, but they're not looking at anything. It's just like, and I do that. I totally do that.
I use that like tactic with my character too. In my, one of my scenes, like they have this moment where like the opportunity to hook up is very present, and my character shuts it down, and it's just like, okay, phone.
Phone,
I need my security right now because I can shut you out with that. And that's a really recognizable thing for the audience, and for just us. Because it hurts. It like actually really hurts to be like, no, I'm choosing to detach right now, and I'm on my phone, and I just can't look at you. Sorry.
I can't, I mean, yeah, the just, it's like the next tier of like someone having their headphones in. It's like, not only are they like, they're like occupied by like five things, if there's no way you can like get in.
Yeah, and it's intentional. It's like, no, I'm shutting you out right now. I can't be.
Yeah.
Too much for me. It's too much.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. And Fran Lebowitz actually had a good take on this recently. She said that like she loves this because now you don't have to talk to anybody. If you don't want to, you know, you don't have to.
The train is so quiet.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. But my, I'll be interested because I still have, I've just been on this tip of like the phone, the iPhone is so unsexy because it's just a brick. So I'm looking forward to seeing like the next iteration of an iPhone-less world. And hopefully that will birth the next iteration of Zoomers. Well, yeah, Zoomers, and they're all on the Facebook Meta thingy, the glasses.
Oh my god! Yeah, I'm like, wait, let me hold on.
I can't. I mean, yeah, but I'm excited. So when are the next few shows happening?
The last two shows on the books right now are for next weekend, March 1st and March 2nd. And then we are going to take a bit of a hiatus, I think. We've been running for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a break. But like, that's sort of what's nice about the center, the way that it operates, is that the plays are all running in rep. So when the cast is available, when the space is available, we can put up Zoomers again. But yeah, it's been sort of the spectacle for a minute, so it's good to let it bring me. Let something else kind of like come into that slot. We have so many plays and so many playwrights, and like there's so many opportunities to like what can be done. And Zoomers has been like, it's been such a rewarding experience, and I'm excited to put it to bed for a little bit, because then we can wait and see what's changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's awesome. I mean, you have to let things breathe a little bit, and you know, they're kind of like children. Like they grow into millennials.
The Zoomers are millennials.
What kind of so I know you guys also have classes over there. What kind of classes are going on during the week?
During the week, we have Matt teaches a playwriting class and a scene study class, and George teaches an acting class, and that's like really all that's on the books right now. But like, we look for like different people to teach like workshops and like different directors to come in and present work. Like, we have a whole weekend of David Levine's work coming this week. So we're doing two stage readings of plays that he's directing, and like a film screening. I think the classes and the sort of just like the work that we do is so, there's so much opportunity to do more. And so I'm interested in like what that looks like this coming year of like bringing in new teachers from outside and bringing in new collaborators. Cause I mean, there's so much that can be done. But yeah, that's like generally what our classes are right now, are those three.
Cool. Amazing. Yeah. Well, hopefully I'll have to make another appearance pretty soon here. Yeah. I think I'll probably, I said on a recent, I'm like, I have to count my pennies, but I will probably be there in May, I think. That'll probably be a good time to be there. Springtime. I'm like, coming out of my like hibernation in the winter. It's been a really warm winter. It's like
Yes,
50 degrees out right now.
the sun is out. Yeah,
Yeah.
the snow doesn't last, which is like, I don't know, makes me sad. I love the snow. I love to like
Yeah.
lie down and submerge myself and
Yeah. Well, also you're from
yeah.
Pittsburgh, so you like you snow. It's like you're in
Yeah,
your element.
it's
Cool.
a strange winter trying to adjust to there not being much snow at all.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all I have on my end. Any plans other than plays, anything that you're producing right now or working on?
There's a couple things that I'm working on. We have a new play called Morning Journal, of Matt's, that is a very entire, like thematically completely different than Zoomers. It's this like very sort of magical play. And I guess the short story, we're still sort of, it's in development. We're doing readings of it now, but it's set in an apartment that is being subletted, and it's being subletted like throughout every scene by a different woman, and it sort of explores her relationship to whoever, like her scene partner, could be her sister, could be her lover, could be her best friend. And so you have a lot of different actors in these roles, playing these different characters with these very different relationships, and they sort of become connected like through the journal, and they start to reflect each other in their lives. And there's a lot of the production team on that is really interesting. We have a set designer, we have a costume designer, we have a cast of like 10 brilliant women. It's just, yeah, it's just so completely thematically different than Zoomers. So it's exciting to tap into that. I'm producing that as well, as I have a cameo in that. I mean, I'm just right now looking to just sort of see, like, I kind of figured out that I really like producing, and so I'm talking to a lot of different writers and actors right now about their work and trying to see like where I can be of service in kind of tapping into that part of my work.
Yeah, producing is fun because you're kind of like this Willy Wonka character and you get to like make cool, fun things, but at the same time, you can also like you have to be like of service to your community and you have to like, give back a lot, which is nice.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice, and it's I'm in the place where I'm like, okay, I want to not always produce the thing I'm acting in, and I don't always want to act in the thing. Like I want to be able to find the separation there, because I think that's what makes you of service, and to sort of find that balance. I don't really know what's after that, but Zoomers has been so exciting and rewarding that like I think I have the confidence to sort of jump into the next project and give it permission to be like whatever it is.
Yeah, huge confidence boost. And you're also engaged, so that's like nothing can stop
Yeah,
you.
that's also fun. Like yeah, there's also the part of me that's like, oh, I'm a bride and I get to
Yeah. Oh, it
do
brings a
that.
little tear to my eye. Like I get so sentimental because like my wedding was like the best day of my life and everything just moves so fast, but it's like great to be in that place where you're just like happy and you're just enjoying the moments. You don't have to do anything right now. You're just like,
Yeah,
me.
we're chilling. We're
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
we'll get married, but we don't know when. Because like when, like I guess we'll have to
Yeah.
like not do a play.
Yeah. Well, a
Time
wedding is sort of like a play itself.
well, yeah, that was we started talking and we were like, oh, do we get like a planner? And Matt's like, Sophia, we like produce events for like a living. I don't think we can get. Maybe we can do. Wait, yeah, so like, do you have any tips that like we need to talk engagement
I
wedding.
know. Well, I know we're kind of matching because I also have a solitaire one.
Oh my God, so cute.
Yeah,
Look
basically the same. It's the best kind to have because it's like I didn't want, so sometimes I go, I walk around, I see girls with like these gigantic, chunky, like they almost look like hairy, like sparkly hair on your knuckles. Because I'm like, that's just, it's so much. And so yeah, I've always wanted the solitaire. My mom had a solitaire, and I also picked it all personally. I was just like, I don't want anything too crazy. Just the
No,
one, just the one.
I didn't pick this, but the second I saw it, I was like, oh, it's perfect. Like,
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
yeah.
And you have the gold? Do you have the
I know.
gold or?
I'm a silver girl.
Okay.
That's
See, mine is white gold, but I think it's just like more yellowy silver.
Yeah, I think this is white gold. I don't know.
Yeah, I
I
have no idea. Ooh, yeah, it looks great, but
know.
no, I think like the most, yeah, no, it's like no matter, yeah, it's like a weird, but I got married, or I got engaged before, during COVID. So it was kind of like the same thing where it's like, when are we getting married, or should we start? But you know,
Yeah.
we didn't really start planning until like a year after we got engaged. So that was great because it was more like, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years,
Yeah.
maybe we have to. And during COVID times, it was like, I don't know what the hell's gonna happen or what we can or can't do. So it's just like no stress, which is nice. Yeah.
Long is very romantic.
Yeah. But I'll send you some recommendations
Oh my God.
because,
Yes. Like
yeah.
spreadsheets,
For
whatever.
sure. Oh yeah, because there's so many things that we had in our wedding where it's like, oh my God, why don't more people do this? So yeah, I'll send you some recommendations for sure.
Yeah,
But
I'm very excited.
yeah, that's a,
It's
such
a
a fun time.
it's
What a whirlwind. How surreal.
when you know, you know. And yeah, that
Yeah.
was yeah, I just sometimes like I it feels very surreal that like this all just it just sort of all came to be very organically and very just like one thing after the other. It was literally like Times Review, engagement, Manhattan shows, Zoomers, like everything sort of like came, and
One
I just
thing
said
led to another, and
everything happened.
oh yeah,
And I
so
think,
goes.
I mean, I just learned primarily this year, like if you walk into, you just have to go into things with confidence and like be like, I don't know everything about myself. I don't know what, like, I'm not fully, a, like, I'm not fully a formed person. I'm ready to be, like, I'm ready to be open to whatever the possibilities are. And then like going into spaces like that makes you confident in a different way of like, I'm ready. I don't know yet what I have exactly to offer, but I have myself and I'm ready to be a part of something and like give myself to the thing. And I think that's like just like helpful in approaching theater and approaching life. And yeah, it's gotten me this far. I'm
Well, it
trying to.
kind of comes back to what you're saying about like maybe you're not ready for something, but New York, I mean, in your case, New York was very ready for you. But it does come back around to like, I don't know who I am, but there are other things that are saying that they're ready for me. So I just like have to let them come to me, which is, yeah, it's nice. Cool. Amazing. Well, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram primarily. My Instagram is so, it's like the first half of my name. It's so. And you can follow the Brooklyn Center for Theater Research on Instagram, BK Center Theater Research, theater spelled RE. And yes,
Right. Write
that
that down.
RE. That's how.
There are two kind of thespians in the
All theater, D, with the RE and the ER. Oh, that's your next meme.
Oh, sorry, wait, what?
That's your next meme.
Oh, I know, seriously. I mean, I've got so many. I was thinking last night, because I have a friend who wants to do a show somewhere in the city, and I was thinking, like, I think my apartment is a little too small, but I do have a storage unit in the basement that has been flooded a couple times. And then I was like, oh, but it is like a series of like barbed wired. I'm like, I don't know if that's illegal. So there's those moments you're trying to rationalize breaking the law sometimes for art, for
Oh
sure.
yeah, I kind of miss when I was like a teenager. I was really in photography, and I would like trespass in all of these like different locations, and I miss to do that, like not have
I,
I could get
yeah.
really arrested. Like that sucks.
Yeah, I had that phase as well. I used to be into graffiti. Like, oh, I'm so like, I'm like so tapped into like urban culture, and I'm like know the art, and I tag my. But yeah, I used to tag my name like on the back of like grocery store buildings and stuff, and like, well, they
No,
didn't even see it coming.
now it's like we're doing indie theater, but we still have to follow some
I
protocols.
know,
Like,
yeah.
how do I go
Yeah,
rogue
I
still?
know. Yeah, how can I like sort of like oh, we're violating like the local property like code or what building code or something. Yeah. But desperate times call for desperate measures. Cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much, Sophia. This has been amazing.
Having me. Yeah, it's
Incredible.
talking to you, and let me know when you're back in New York.
Absolutely, will do.
Mean, you can do like an evil thespian like live at the center. That would be
I've thought, yeah, I've been waiting for the perfect opportunity, but it will have to be like sometime in the spring, and I'm just like right place, right time. But when you know, it'll be ready for me. Ready for me, for sure. All right, cool. Well, end scene.